This is GamesAtWork.biz, your weekly podcast about gaming, technology, and play. Your hosts are Michael Martin, Andy Piper, and Michael Rowe. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and are not the opinions of any organization which they have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 340, Tiny Grand Ideas. Hello and welcome again to GamesAtWork.biz, your weekly podcast talking all about games, work, technology, possibly a little bit of Lego, who knows, we might get to it. My name's Andy Piper. I've been away for a little while. I'm excited to be back with my friends, and I'm going to pass us across to Mr. Michael Rowe. How are you doing, Michael?
I am well, Andy. Welcome back. Good to see you. Your smiling tone and hear your dulcet smiling face and hear your dulcet tones. Your smiling tone. See, you're smiling while talking. There it is. I'm just glad that we're going to be talking about some technology and some gaming today. And I will hand it off to our other co-host and friend, Michael Martin.
Hey, y'all. It's great to be all together again, too. So I'm really looking forward to this today. And Andy, you started off by saying that we're going to talk a little bit about a few pieces of technology. So nicely done. Very well. And we're going to start with one of the little things that came across our feeds this week. And that is a miniaturized version of an Atari 2600 and Dance Revolution. So for those of you that just don't have the rec room space to put one of those arcade cabinets up in your home or your basement or wherever it might be, you can do one of these. And they are like ultra super tiny, and you can dance the night away with your fingertips on Dance
Revolution. I was about to say, if I tried to dance on that, I would shatter it with one step.
With your fingertips.
So I'd miss this story, which is amusing because I've been tracking tiny devices recently for reasons. And but then I've just gone and had a look at the story and realized that the devices are only going to be available in Target.
Target.
So I won't be getting them, either the Atari 2600 or the Dance Dance Revolution. I remember fondly going to an arcade in Tokyo when I was there a few years ago, and there being an entire floor just of dance machines.
Awesome.
So each of the floors in the, I think there were, I don't know, something like 10 stories in the building, and each one was kind of themed all around, you know, different types of gaming machine and hardware. But yeah, I've never been very good at those ones. The 2600 looks really fun. It's got a Pong game that they're demonstrating in the video.
Yep.
In the GIF.
And it looks like Centipede is available too.
Oh yeah, there's also right? that. That's cool.
So yeah, that's the one I like. I don't know. Are they actually playable though?
It looks like it might be.
I would need some really giant thick Coke bottle glasses to see the Centipede screen.
Yeah, I mean it has got an LCD screen.
Yeah.
So yeah, when you power it up, you can play a number of different games, including Pac-Man, Asteroids, Breakout, Tempest, and Pong. So
awesome!
Of course, as we mentioned already, so there's a ton of them there. It's really funny. I've been building various retro machines recently, starting with a retro flag, which is where you put a Raspberry Pi Zero into a Game Boy case, a Game Boy cartridge, basically, and then you can plug that in, and you can. It's because it supports RetroArch, which is a framework for running lots of different emulators. You can run a ton of these different platforms on that, as if it's a Game Boy.
So you tweeted about that this morning, or earlier today, I should say, on recording day, and I was wondering a lot about this in terms of the PROMs, right? So being able to play the various Game Boy games on the miniaturized device, especially given some of the things that we've talked about I think you were last here too, of the availability of those games and being able to put them on those machines. So I'm curious to know, what are you able to play on your miniaturized version of the Game Boy at this point in time? And how does that work?
Yeah, so there's another machine I've got, which is called a Funkey S, which is from a French company, which looks more like a little Game Boy Advance. and it's really cool. It's much smaller than the Game Boy, the Retroflag GPI that I've got, which is literally the footprint of a 1990s Game Boy. This one is designed to fit on a keychain. So it's got a very tiny screen, and that comes preloaded with a lot of homebrew games, so games written by enthusiasts. Sideload if you've got legitimate copies. You can sideload games because it's got a micro SD card. I've already taken it apart and upgraded the size of SD card it has in there, and you just plug it in. It appears as a mass storage device, and you can just add on the games into the relevant emulator folders. So that's really fun. I've also got something called an Ardu Boy, which is a credit card sized console, and it's wafer thin.
Wafer thin.
Very cool. But that's running on an Arduino with some flash storage, Arduino chip, I should say, an Atmel chip. The really cool thing about that is it's also got a very small screen. The really cool thing about that is it starts instantly. I mean, it doesn't have any kind of boot time at all. It literally,
no lag.
It's working. All of the games for that are written. Some of them are close facsimiles of famous games, they're all written for that console. But a lot of the emulators, you can play sort of original games, assuming you have or can find or legitimately get the images. The point I'm making, though, going back to the beginning of that little waffle, is that, for example, the Funky comes with homebrew games written for these consoles, including the Game Boy and the Neo Geo. So people are still building those. And in fact, I've backed a Kickstarter recently for a game. I'm trying to remember. Oh, that was for a ColecoVision game that's been written fresh, right? So that's pretty incredible. And there's also a Kickstarter at the moment, I think, for an office suite for the Game Boy that somebody's building
office
from
for
scratch
Game
again.
Boy?
Well, you want to be productive
it's
while
like
you're
a
playing
text
games.
Editor. Yeah, exactly, right? So,
yeah.
You know.
When you're taking that time out for fun, you might as well work on a spreadsheet.
so there's some fun things there. It's also a good exercise in learning to code as well, especially if you're starting from something like the Ardu Boy, so you're learning C programming. I've also got something called an ESP Boy, which is running a wireless chip. And it's got a little extension port on the top. So you can basically break out the pins and attach different devices. So the chap that's built this, the author that or the architect of this device, he's based in St. Petersburg, and he's got a web radio receiver. So you can plug in an MP3 chip. And yeah, I mean, it's already got Wi-Fi and on the board inside, you can receive and play web radio. So, and he's also built a load of others. He posted one on his Twitter this morning where he was using it for like ice fishing. So he was using it as like a remote for a fishing rod for ice fishing, which looks incredible. I'm getting involved in a lot of these different communities at the moment, just for fun, really, to see what you can do with these things. People are still interested in building experiences for some of these devices, as well as making it easier to access some of those older classic games that came in on consoles in the 90s and 2000s.
Given your experience here, are there newly generated or created hardware too that would allow for taking an existing cartridge? If I find it one in the back of my drawer and be able to go play it, is there that sort of thing happening too?
You can get extensions on plugins for some of these things that let you use original cartridges. The other really cool thing I've got, which I got while I was away, is something called a Mister, which is an FPGA based piece of hardware.
Cool.
So instead of a software emulation that's running on, let's say, a Raspberry Pi or something else, this is hardware emulation. Now, this is very cool. This is very cool because people have actually reconfigured the FPGA to be not just pretend to be the software layer pretending to be the original console.
Hardware, yeah.
Hardware. It is the original hardware. I mean, basically, you're reprogramming the CPU, the FPGA, to be the original console, which means you get all of the weird things.
Timing issues and things.
Yeah, exactly right. So, and it's even worse when you think about the fact that, today we're using as inputs USB, and we're using HDMI for output. Now the Mister comes, you can get two varieties of it. You can get one which is digital out and one which is analog out, right? So you've got a VGA portal or something else for going out to a CRT, and you may, well have a 3.5 mil jack instead of putting everything out through a digital output. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then there are gadgets that let you mediate between the original controllers and the hardware. I am using a digital version that I just plug in a USB controller, or in fact, of course, you could even use I quite often use a Switch Pro controller over Bluetooth, because you can just plug in a USB Bluetooth receiver. But there are timing issues. It could be timing issues with those kinds of things, or there has to be clever stuff happening to jump around that. The Mister is very, very cool. I tweeted a picture of it. I can't remember, but I will make sure that we include something in the show notes about it.
What's interesting, I was actually listening to another tech podcast a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about a growing market for analog monitors for high-end gamers, because you didn't have some of the same issues that you get with a digital monitor, right, when it comes to like fragging people in the game, right? Because every single frame refresh is a timing issue ultimately when it comes down to getting that headshot in the game. And if you have a analog one, you don't have the same, I mean, think of it, analog's a curve, digital is a series of dots along that curve, right. So you have a much better gaming experience on the high end of, you know, Twitch gamers than a digital signal. Something I hadn't even thought about it, but then again, I'm not leet when it comes to those games anyway.
Yeah, and to me, that you'd have to be really, really at the high end that makes a significant difference for you, because the digital monitor experience should be able to refresh things faster than the eye, theoretically.
Oh, right. Right. Yeah, but, you know, it's the same reason some of us like, you know, certain technology, right? Because we think we're that good that we want it, right? So there's a lot of perception in that, too, I would think.
Carbon fiber.
Well, So the next thing that I've backed on Kickstarter is the Thumby, which is has got a tiny, tiny, tiny display. I think it's got five retro games, free open source games that come on it. I believe it's running the RP2040 Raspberry Pi. Yeah, that's right, the Raspberry Pi RP2040 processor. And it's ridiculously small. How big is the screen? I can't see it listed here now.
It looks like 1.5 by 1 centimeters or something like that. Yeah. It's tiny.
I love the fact that it also does support a link cable between to another console, though. And so similarly, also running on the RP2040, and I think I'm due to get one next week, is the Pi Moroni Pico system. So that's another gaming console that's kind of similar, that you can program in MicroPython or Arduino C. So yeah, it's pretty exciting times, just if you're into these kinds of things. I really love the RetroFlag GPI and the Zero that I have. The Pi Zero isn't the best for running some of the high-end games, and the console itself runs off batteries, so it doesn't last very long. But there's also a thing called Retro Achievements, where now that a lot of these games, there's like a layer that can ping a server to enable achievements in a lot of these older games.
That's too funny.
So like if you're playing the Indiana Jones game from the NES or something, then there are achievements you can earn. So that's really fun.
Yeah, amazing.
People have gone back and sort of retrofitted the gaming, you know, techniques and mechanisms we are used to today to those older bits of hardware.
So not having any experience on that at all, the thing that flashed through my mind there was taking pictures of the game experience and then letting the AI determine, you've made it to beat these thuggy guards in the Indiana Jones game, so therefore I'm going to give you the thuggy experience award silver, right? Because the AI could recognize that you've achieved that. But I understand what you're just describing is a deeper layer of integration into the gaming experience too. With all the tiny stuff that we've been talking about, and this is what I was dangling for the two of you before the call started, the movie clip from Zoolander was really what was also going into my head.
The phone. Too,
about the tiniest phone. And
oh, yeah, that's right.
It's amazing where we're seeing this sort of tiny experience. Certainly the movies in Zoolander's old, but we're seeing a number of these things starting to pop again in commercial and consumer-driven products. Apple's iPad Mini, to wit, is being one of the stars of the show recently. Other miniaturized devices getting a lot of love and attention, too.
Is this a Mac's backlash?
I don't know. I'm wondering, right? You know, is there... You know, is it cool to be small? And, you know, and is it part of our green kind of thought pattern of let's consume less? And is there a zeitgeist coming around here that bigger isn't necessarily better? I don't know, right? Maybe.
Yeah, I had totally forgotten about the Zoolander scene, but hilarious. And, you know, it's funny because Apple, you know, talking about the Mini, right? They refresh that, what, every 5 years, it seems? So it's been a while since the last one. They are continuing at least, what is this, the third release of the phone in the smallest size format. I didn't call it Mini. But it seems like many things are going in the other direction. When you think about the Mini, you hear people wanting to use it as a phone because it's bigger than the Max Pro, right? You've got the foldable phones from Samsung that are foldable, and when they're open, they're bigger, right? The flip one is actually interesting to me, right? The one that actually turns into almost like the old Razer phones, right? That flip open to be used. I think that's a cool example of miniaturization, because if you're truly using it as a phone and a somewhat small consumption device, that's perfect. I still want to see the office on on the old gaming retro game consoles that Andy, you described. That just is wrong on so many levels.
Well, maybe they designed pivot tables right in from the start there.
Hey, pivot tables are on numbers finally. Wow. I'm excited about that. I am. They added the feature. I just saw it the other day, and I was like, oh, they're making a big deal. Pivot tables have been around forever. Thank you for catching up.
The Kickstarter has been funded 7 times over.
Wow.
It has 8 days to go. It's going to be available in digital and physical editions. it's a full productivity suite.
That is just amazing.
CD-ROM of it, too? Yeah, you can load it up on
including
CD?
Including calculator, notepad, to-do list, paperweight, and clock.
Paperweight? That's what happens to my machines when I use them after a while.
One of the apps, paperweight.
Keeps all your digital windows from flying away.
Well, going from, you know, the tiny and the retro,
yeah.
Why don't we jump to the future? The metaverse and the latest update from Facebook on their metaverse visions. Andy, I think you found this article about that on their premature talk. Was that you or me?
I posted about talked to you and Michael a week or so ago about them talking about building the metaverse, but I hadn't actually seen this one until today. The premature talk story from Fast Company. Certainly, the conversation about them building it we've had before, and them talking about doing it in a respectful, or what was the terminology they used? I can't remember the word that they used.
It was something like respectful here. You're right. Exactly.
Which made me smile in terms of the way they were talking about doing something. What did you think? Yeah, responsibly build. That's right.
Responsibly.
It was in The Verge earlier in the week. $50 million to responsibly build the metaverse, which was interesting.
Well, what I find interesting about this article, and it just goes back, right, saying, you know, is the hype too premature that there's going to be a backlash? And, I mean, let's face it, the metaverse has been talked about multiple times. Back even in the 90s, right, the active world people were trying to define the metaverse back then. We had that discussion back in the aughts, 06, 07, 08, around various virtual world environments. Now we're back in the discussion. I don't think it's premature. I think it's about damn time that we try it again. The question is, do we actually have, back to our start, right? Do we have the right standards in place to make the metaverse an open platform for interoperability between the various different social and entertainment and news and business, technology and business and environments for it to become a metaverse? If it's any one of those individually, it's not a metaverse, right? You're talking about just, you know, connecting up a couple of games. The thought process behind the metaverse is, can you, recreate your analog self and your analog activities digitally across the day, right? Going in and out of different virtual or different digital environments as if you were physically doing the same thing. And recreating that experience digitally. And yay for Facebook to try to do something, right? Yay for a couple of gaming platforms for trying to do something. But until you take it up that next level higher in the stack and standardize across these different domains, it's just like AI. You can have really good AI that does text-to-speech, but that doesn't help you AI in image recognition. So we don't get to generalize to AI, right? We have specialized or domain-specific AI. And the metaverse is going to require that same concept of how do you get to generalize connectivity, not domain-specific.
Yeah, so this was the conversation I was hoping we would have when this article crossed my landscape, and that's why I popped it in here for us, because it's exactly that. I thought the whole respectful and gradual dominance kind of approach that was reflected in this article about where and how Facebook is acting was an interesting take on it all. And Michael completely subscribed to what you're laying down here too. That's what we've been talking about for a while. So hype cycle wise, we've been in the doldrums here for a while. So I was certainly entertained by a number of other posts that I've seen and tweets that I've seen recently about the folks who are claiming that they're driving the metaverse cycle and it's like all brand new. And it's like, no, not quite so brand new. And, you know, it was, you know, I need somebody who has 14 years worth of experience in this sort of stuff. Well, you know what? There are people who have 14 years worth of experience in this stuff, if that's what you're really striving for. So,
or a hell of a lot more.
or a hell of a lot more, right? Yeah, absolutely. Now, another article that we at least shared around and looked at a little bit was the fact that Amazon has come out with a whole number of innovations, as they are wont to do about this time of year. And there were a number of them that caught our attention, including Astro, which is not to be confused with the Jetsons character. This is a little robot that can't go up and down stairs, but can do an awful lot more in your household, and was very reminiscent to me of what we had seen from, gosh, it was last year, wasn't it? The Ring Always Home Cam that could fly around. This one rolls around.
Yeah, I mean, the Ring Up Cam is apparently definitely coming out this year, and them having announced it this time last year. But yeah, as you say, this one is, you know, an evolution of that. Not aerial, but it's floor based, but it also looks like, I mean, the video is really interesting and really good and very sort of the publicity video that Amazon came out with to show this thing off. I mean, it looks really fun. The proof is going to be in the application of the technology and how far away it is from shipping or if it ever does ship, because they've announced things at their annual hardware events also that have not shipped at all. And this one, unfortunately, a couple of the days after the event, I think it was on Tuesday, some people that allegedly worked on it started to make some less positive noises about its capabilities. So there was also an interesting story I saw this week as well about paying to beta test these things, because, you know, I think this particular robot is, you know, over $1,000, I think maybe $2,000, nearly $2,000. And, you know, if it's not baked, then that's exactly what you're doing to some extent. Now, that's not to say that I don't believe in iterative development of products, because I do, but you'd hope that it can at least do some of the things that, or most of the things that they've advertised it as doing. Whether or not that's the case, we shall see when and if it ships.
$1,000 to beta test is cheap. Google Glass was $1,500, you know, and it's dead. It's hanging on my door over there in the office.
It's not even a paperweight?
Nope, it's not a paperweight. I can no longer even reconnect. At one point in time, the server was still up, so I could at least reconnect and play with it and attach it to my phone. But now it's dead as a doornail. It's a $1,500 door hanger.
Well, so being on the cutting edge sometimes has its costs, and being on the cutting edge, right, being a beta tester is maybe that's part of the equation these days. And there are enough people that are willing to part with cash to that degree. Makes sense. That's a commercialization strategy. This Amazon Robot 2 reminded me, we didn't get a chance to talk about it last week, but of this Geta Mini, which is another little robot that follows you around, also same yep. price point, where you could put your backpack inside of this robot and it would follow you around and schlep the backpack for you. Interesting task-based specific sort of things. We're going to see more and more of these coming forward, and maybe that's the price point that people are going to be willing to experiment with them and see if they're actually useful or not.
Well, I think this is quite interesting as well, because Amazon's now made its way into people's homes and lives with Alexa in a way that people are quite familiar with or comfortable with using that tool. So asking this robot to do some of the things it can do becomes natural there as well. Giving it a different name is wise. I did enjoy the video. My wife and I watched it, and the way that the video plays out at the end, you know, the robot takes a beer to the wife and a special delivery, and she was like, "You're going to do that for me, aren't you? This is how you're going to persuade me that we need this thing." Now, it's not shipping in the UK, at least, you know, as stated on the website at the moment, where you can go and sign up for the early access. But it was a fun thing to watch for sure. It would be utterly useless because we have stairs and we don't have enough space really for it to just like get toddle around in the downstairs area.
The interesting parts that I heard about it, and there's been a lot of people kind of hating on it this week too, but the part that I found interesting is actually using it as in-home security, right? Where if somebody's in your house that it does not recognize from a facial perspective, it will follow them around and send you video on it.
Right.
So that is interesting. Now, I'm assuming that you can say, no, Andy's okay or Michael's okay. You don't need to follow them around anymore and shut that off. But I do find that aspect interesting. At the same time, given the size, shape, et cetera, of it, if I broke into your house and your little friendly robot walked over to me and said, "Hey, I'm going to start following you around," I probably would just pick it up and throw it out of the house or toss it upstairs so it couldn't follow me the rest of the way.
Well, this is all getting used to it. So, and picking up, Andy, where you're going, right? Getting used to Alexa being around and listening in. You have them on your phone. You have them in your car. You have them in your thermostat. You have them in all these other places. This is a natural next extension. And hesitate, but I'll give you a Back to the Future kind of notion on this. The little mouse droid that runs around the Death Star is probably the same thing, right? You know, it would know where things are. Maybe it was delivering some physical object, perhaps a little Game Boy, you know, to, you know, the people that were about to shoot the big laser, or, you know, maybe a key that they needed.
So they can practice.
They can practice. But getting used to these sort of things is going to be a very human condition, so that they will become background noise and then be ultimately useful. Because if you leapt, you know, right into a bigger, broader use case where people are uncomfortable with them, they would pick them up and throw them out, right? So you got to do the cute small stuff and baby steps here first for folks to get comfortable enough with them. They're a pet. They're a camera that rolls around. They can do something small, useful for me, and I'm okay with that.
They're a floor waxer or a dessert topper.
Okay, so interesting. We've got a couple of entertainment things that are coming up here. And Michael, TV Guide, gosh, that's a magazine that we know pretty well in the U.S. From years and years and years ago. But this is not TV Guide. This is Apple TV Plus Guide.
Yes.
So you, I think, are excited about the veritable cornucopia of choices and available media for consumption coming up these days, right?
Yeah, I was really surprised to see all these things on Apple TV Plus now. You know, I started off with the free year, right? I have since upgraded because I do find content on Apple TV Plus that I enjoy. Ted Lasso being an obvious one. We talked about Schmigadoon. Yep. Central Park is fun in a goofy kind of way. And other ones keep coming in and out. I think one of the ones that I really enjoyed was 1971, the year that music changed everything, which is a documentary on the music from 1971. And there's so much backstory I did not know about songs I remember, you know, my parents playing growing up, that it was like, oh, holy crap, that song had a lot more meaning than I recognized, and just really powerful stuff. But I also, you know, last week, I think it was last week that Foundation finally was released, that there's been a lot of talk about, and I got to watch one episode so far, I must say, I'm enjoying the content that Apple is putting out on Apple TV Plus, and what I tend to find annoying is all the streaming services finding what you want. There's just so much content. And we were talking about before the show that this is like the week of way too much TV. Mm. Having a site where I could just say, show me the, you know, the catalog, the single thing to get everything.
like a TV guide?
But that's what the Apple TV app is aiming to do as an aggregator, right? So I can add stuff to my favorites in the Channel 4 and BBC apps, and they'll show up as my up next in the Apple TV app, rather than being from Apple TV Plus, the actual service. Now, the problem with that is that other services like Netflix don't integrate, or at least I don't think Netflix integrates, if I remember rightly, into the TV app. So, you know, you still end up with those walled gardens of content, which is, I don't think it's particularly surprising in the end. I mean, we all had these dreams about, you know, cable cutting and all that sort of stuff. But in the end, yeah, we've just ended up with a whole new set of providers.
We've patch cabled ourselves.
To more than one of them, right?
Well, I know Apple TV is trying to be that aggregator, but it let me put it politely, it stinks. If I want to see what I want to watch, right? It tries to predict things, right? There are shows that I started watching on, say, Amazon Prime, and when I go back in, it goes, here it is. It's available on Hulu. I didn't want to watch it on Hulu, right? I want to keep watching it on the service I'm watching it on.
Yeah, 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 exactly. And I watched the first episode of The Problem, comma, with Jon Stewart last night, actually. And he makes a joke at the end and kind of says, you're not going to watch this whole show. You're going to just consume it in little clips on YouTube. You don't even know how to find Apple TV. Being on Apple TV himself. So, yeah, that was pretty fun. Yeah, no, there's a ton of stuff that's, I agree with you, there's a ton of good stuff on Apple TV Plus, some of which we've spoken about in the show. I still haven't watched For All Mankind, apart from the first episode. There's Earth at Night in Colour and Tiny World that have been out on there for ages that I haven't seen yet. Been out for a year on there.
Fraggle Rock.
And then there's a ton of good stuff. Fraggle Rock, Mythic Quest I have seen, which is very good. And is likely to appeal to fans of this podcast as well. The 1971 show, I want to watch that one. That's been out for 6 months now already. Ted Lasso, I'm just going to make a list of all the things, which is kind of pointless. But there's a ton of good stuff just on Apple TV Plus at the moment that I want to see. Plus, there's stuff on other platforms. And I think I was reading that Amazon Prime has just got a couple of shows that I really want to see as well. So
yeah, you need a TV guide, right? Or the catalog that says, here's everything. Here, no, I don't want an AI. I want my discovery. I want to see the list. I don't want it to say, based off of things you watch, this is what you want to watch. I want to do discovery.
Did either of you watch a show called Halt and Catch Fire?
Yes.
It's available on Amazon Prime here, and I haven't seen it yet. But when I was away, somebody recommended it to me, and I've got the first season to watch at some point. It looks pretty interesting to me, around sort of early days of technology and even the internet era and those kind of things. So I'm excited to catch up on that.
Yeah, I think we actually watched that on FX or one of the regular broadcast shows, broadcast tools. Yeah.
That sounds like the kind of thing that it would have been on. But talking of FX, in fact, and some of those channels, I don't know how I feel about this, but Michael, you wanted to talk about Babylon 5.
Yeah, I saw this week that J. Michael Straczynski is actually rebooting Babylon 5. And the feeds I saw it on were on Babylon 5 stars that I really enjoy, Ivanova, right? And Sheridan's, and they're actually positively excited about it. And what's interesting to me is there's been this underground movement for some time by some of the special effects artists from the original show to re-render the show at, you know, with new and improved graphics, which is one of the big problems when they upscaled the stuff for streaming. You got this really screwed up looking graphics. They were skewed and other things. So I'm excited and worried at the same time, right?
Yeah. Well, it's a reboot, right? So and it's a remake, essentially, I'm guessing. So or some kind of change to the underlying thing. I mean, it's not a sequel or a prequel, so it's a reimagining. I don't know. I mean, what wording is being used other than a reboot of?
Yeah, because there were so many movies that he did after the show stopped, and many of those were kind of meh.
Yeah, right? So I'm not really sure. I mean, I think it is a classic in its own right, and I'm nervous. But then so was Battlestar Galactica, right?
And that reboot was fantastic. Reboot,
right, but it was also quite different. I mean, there was commonalities, but quite different. So I'm curious to see what he does with it, because he is a really creative guy. So I'm interested to see.
Yeah.
Talking of sci-fi epics, the show that you were really excited about, Michael, and have been talking to us about all week, but neither Michael or I have watched it yet, was one of those supposedly unfilmable things, right? So also on Apple TV is Foundation. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. What did you think?
I never read the book.
Ah, okay.
So I don't have that coming in. It's interesting. I was listening to Security Now, and they actually said something that I experienced. My wife and I were watching the first episode earlier this week, and there's many, many scenes where they decide that not being able to understand what the people are saying is important. Matter of fact, the very first scene of the show, very first scene, some kids running around playing. And they're saying stuff. And it sounds like... And you're like, oh, okay, it must not be important. But if you crank it up, or if you turn on closed captioning, it's important. You have to understand right. what's... And they do this multiple times through the show. So the sound mix is a little worrisome at times, especially for those of us with, shall we say, more mature ears. but see. Yeah, graphics-wise... It's fantastic. It is epic feeling. The story is just getting started. I'm already ready for it. Yeah, I'm ready for it.
Millennia and up to 8 series to go. So I'll be curious to see what happens, both in the terms of the actual TV production and in terms of how they satisfy the realism of fans. So
yeah. I assume you've read the book.
I read one of the books. There is a book, but there's also the way that Asimov actually tied a lot of his stuff together, and you know, even started to connect up things that he wrote completely separately, but had some similar ideas, or you know, he created this kind of shared universe out of a lot of, or took advice and managed to connect up a lot of stuff. So there's some really interesting reading you can subsequently do to try and put those pieces together if you're interested. But yeah, I mean, it is an epic idea in the first place. You know, it's,
yeah,
it, you know, you're going from, you know, talking about thousands of years of stuff. And in order to make that something compelling as a storytelling format, you either really need to be interested and follow through in a series of books, or, you know, in televisual terms, it's going to get confusing, right? So,
cool. We shall see. Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I thought. And it's so important that you said that. Well, I know we have time for just one more thing. And
one more
Andy,
thing.
You have the thing.
I don't have the thing yet. I got up this morning for the thing. Because it's the 1st of October, which is the day that the new Lego sets drop at the Woo-hoo. Store. So they're coming out with a Lego Mario 64 question mark block, which I'm excited about. So this is not just a little block. This is a sizable three-dimensional block, which has a series of levers and cogs and things that you can open up, and got little dioramas of different levels and environments from the Mario series, which I'm really excited about. And I,
yep, three of them
will not be surprised. In fact, there's more than that. I believe there's
really?
Three in the picture, but if you explore, you find some really interesting things. And the Ooh. Characters are these absolutely tiny microfigs because, of the way they want to represent things. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be surprised. Won't be surprised when the first people start to automate this and sort of put, you know, motors and servos and things inside
and lights.
It opening up for, yeah. you know, and lights and so on. I mean, there's some great companies already that do lighting kits for Lego sets. So I'd be curious to see what they do. Of course, also Michael pointed out when we were discussing this in the pre-show that the other set that's just gone on sale today is the Lego Ideas. So the website where, you know, enthusiasts can come up with their own sets and get voted on, the Fender Stratocaster. Which comes with an amp and two bodies, a black and a red. Looks absolutely incredible. In fact, my favorite detail on it, which is going to sound ridiculous given what the level of detail and love in the set itself is the strap, because it's got a little strap that's got like printed with like Lego brick material. It looks really fun.
Very yeah, cool.
I'm excited to see that in a little bit more detail too. I love the Princeton amp reproduction and the fact that the back part of the drawer, so to speak, is painted. You can open up the amp and you can see the insides of it and how the wires and such are connected too. So that's gonna be a fun build there. Did you order both of them, Andy?
No, I did not get the Stratocaster. I already don't have enough space for things anyway, so and I've got a ton of sets that I haven't built. But the 64 block, the like Mario 64 block, is so cool.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's also cool. I don't quite know what incited me to choose one over the other. Because I really love the typewriter Lego idea set that came out a couple months ago as well. That was amazing. There was a grand piano one that came out about a year ago now, which was also beautiful. So there's been some really nice sort of display sets recently. It's great stuff.
And as a company, Lego's actually doing quite well. I saw something recently from the Wall Street Journal somewhere about they're doing quite well, and perhaps it was part of the pandemic where people needed things to build and you couldn't buy enough puzzles, or perhaps it's the level of innovation and creativity here too. Either way, I'm happy for the company. I'm happy for the what's coming out.
It could be because of all the people now building Lego sets at work, as we talked about last week.
That could be. I mean, there's probably a bump, a retroactive bump, you know, because people are listening to this in the past from the future. Maybe that's part of it, too.
In the future, they're listening to the past to hear about the present.
Yeah, some of all of that. Well, with that in mind, team, we've given you some tiny ideas and some big ideas and a little bit about Lego ideas here in the end. And if you have a few ideas, send them our way. We'd love to hear them, you know, over on our Twitter stream or any of our other channels. And we'll be back again with you around about this time next week. And until then, we're wishing you happy good listening. And thanks for joining us for this episode. See ya.
Bye.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming, technology, and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.